let's get started.
Those that'll show up late will show up. Anyways, I'm Wayne McAllister, the chair this evening, and we need to do some introductions and stuff. Also, we need to talk about kind of procedures a little bit. As presentations are given by our DWR people, we need to listen to the presentation clear through before we ask questions. So that's something to remember. Anyway, so the RAC will have questions first, and then the public will have questions, and then we'll go to comments by the public, and then comments and discussion by the board before a motion. So those are kind of some of the normal procedures that we do each time. So we'll try to listen clear through the presentation, write down your questions, and then at the end, the RAC will ask the first questions of the presenter. So this is typical Robert's Rules of Order in that we discuss it. If we want to make an amendment to the motion, an amendment can be made and voted on and things that way. So that's just a general discussion on procedures. So let's start down here with Dan. You'll introduce yourself and say who you represent.
Okay, yeah. Hi, good evening. I'm Dan Abeda, and I'm representing the Ashley National Forest.
Mitch Hacking, and I represent agriculture.
Andrea Merrill, I represent non-consumptive.
Prevadel, at large.
And Wayne McAllister, chair and at large.
Boyd Blackwell, the division secretary.
Jerry Jorgensen, elected officials.
David Gordon, representing Vernal BLM.
Rob Morrison, represents sportsmen.
Randy Dorth, representing sportsmen.
Okay. Well, thank you. Last meeting, when we went out to the state board meeting, just a couple of quick comments on what took place out there. As on the different items that were discussed, conservation sportsman's permit noted that there was, from different groups, there's $20 million of conservation money from groups that's put back into conservation. I thought that was an impressive number. Also, on the North Slope, they try to do a flyover Wyoming and Utah together as they do a deer inventory. And I thought that's another interesting point just to pass along, just for information. The motions were similar to ours. They were unanimous. There was one addition on six on bucks, bulls, and permits for 2015. They did present it as leave the Vernon like it was last year. They raised the Manti 150, and the beaver unit they left it was last year. So it was real similar to the way we had made a vote and stuff here in the northeastern region. But it was presented by the wildlife people to the board out there with some of those things included. So it was some good information shared. And we need to, so we need to approve the agenda for today. And if you've looked over the agenda, see any changes or anything we need to add? If so, we'll go with the agenda, make a motion to approve the agenda, I guess, and then make a motion to approve last meeting's minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay. So Randy moved and David had seconded on the agenda. And what about the meetings for last meeting? The minutes.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and accept the minutes as they're presented here from last month's meeting.
I'll second it.
Okay. Dan made the motion. David seconded it. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. We'll turn time to Boyd to give us a wildlife board update. I guess I kind of gave you an update already. The regional supervisor.
Yeah. You might notice that Gail's not here tonight. She's asked to be excused. And we have Rory Lubbers, who's here. She works also in the front. And if you see me pointing, it's for her benefit so that she gets an idea of who's what and where we are. And she may stop us and ask us to repeat ourselves. She's not the speed demon typer that Gail is. But she's the speed demon writer. So we'd welcome her to be working with us and helping us tonight. Let's see, regional, some of the things we're doing in the region, we've got a Pelican Lake tagged carp fishing contest that we're working with Sportsman's Warehouse on. The carp are, we have a lot of carp in Pelican. I think we talked about this a little bit the last time we got together, but I don't know that I told you that we were having a contest out there. But so they've got prizes and things that you can win. They're going to have a chili cook-off at 2. There'll be plenty of food and stuff out there on, let's see, when was that?
Oh, August 1st.
August 1st. So if you don't have anything to do and you want to go out there for some food, for at least some chili, and we'll see how it goes. But there's that going on. We've got a couple of free fishing days coming up, or at least one on June 6th, free fishing day, and a couple of kids events, one at Stillwater Ponds and one at the Moose Ponds coming up. And I think that's all I have for you tonight. That's all I have written down for you for tonight. So that's it. Unless you have any questions. Yes, sir.
At the board meeting, did they approve the increase on the antlerless deer permits?
Can you better remember? They considered it. They figured they'd wait till the last minute. Let me look at some of that just a minute. On the antlerless, they did.
Yeah, for the I think they did for the private property.
They did, yeah, for the private. That's what I was. For the private property. And that was on the Manti La Salle, along the Manti, in the Manti area. It's the only place I think they increased it on the antlerless. The others, they figured they'd wait till the weather, see what the weather was going to do. And that way, before the antlerless, they could increase those numbers if they needed to. Kind of their general discussion.
Thank you. Let me also, I've got, we'll have some general business for the RAC here at the end. As I stated the last meeting, we have a couple of RAC members that will be leaving us. I've been working with Salt Lake for replacements. We will have a replacement by July. And I know that Wayne and I have actually sat down and talked to him. And I believe we've got some good individuals coming in. So just to let you know on that.
Okay, great. So let's go to item number 5, waterfowl recommendations by Blair Stringham, waterfowl coordinator.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tonight I'll be presenting the 2015-16 migratory game bird hunt recommendations. Before I get into the recommendations, I wanted to give just a few updates on some of the things that are happening in the migratory bird program here in Utah and across the nation. First one is our recommendation timeline, which is the process that we work with Fish and Wildlife Service to get waterfowl hunts established each year. The current process that we work under is we meet as a flyway each year in the month of July. We put forward proposals to the Fish and Wildlife Service. And those are typically accepted around the first part of August. At that point, we can make our actual selections for our hunt dates and for our bag limits. And then those go on to be published in the Federal Register sometime in the month of September. It puts us under a real tight time crunch because if those aren't published, we can't technically hold a hunt for migratory birds. So we've been working with them for several years to try to push those deadlines back, so it gives us more time to work on those and to get everything published in time for our hunts each fall. So the process we'll be working under from moving forward is we'll meet as flyways in September to do hunt recommendations for the following year. So they'll give us a year in advance to put forth our proposals. Those will be accepted in October. And then we'll begin our state selection process. So we'll take our hunt recommendations for waterfowl to the rack and the board during the month of December. And so this upcoming December, we'll likely do our 2016-17 hunt recommendations. And those will go on and be published in June, which will give us several months to get everything in order for our guidebooks, well in advance of the hunts, and give hunters more time to plan for their upcoming hunts in the fall. So the current recommendations we'll be doing tonight will be for 2015 and 16. And those haven't gone through the Flyway or Fish and Wildlife Service process yet, so there is some flexibility there, and the possibility they could be changed. And if they are, we'll go with the longest season dates allowed and maximum bags offered by the Fish and Wildlife Service. And then in a couple months, I'll be back and we'll do the recommendations for 2016-17. Also wanted to give a brief update on the number of waterfowl hunters across the state and waterfowl populations across North America. We've been tracking these for a lot of years now, and for the most part, our hunter numbers have always tracked fairly well with waterfowl populations. As they've gone up, our hunter numbers have gone up, but they've gone down. We've seen hunter numbers tend to trend down. That held true until about the year 2000, when we saw a steep decline in the number of people participating in waterfowl hunting across the state. It really hasn't rebounded since that time, although we have seen the number of waterfowl increasing nearly exponentially since about the year 2000. We don't really know exactly why those are occurring, but we are working to do more outreach to try to increase hunter recruitment and retention across the state. We've done a variety of waterfowl workshops to try to increase hunter opportunity, teach them skills to go out and actually hunt. We've also worked on establishing more access both on our waterfowl management areas in terms of infrastructure, as well as providing programs like walk-in access to increase opportunities for people to go out and live closer to their home. We've also been working on increasing the number of resources available to people, such as our maps. We've done online tutorials, such as the turkey hunting tutorial you may have seen that came out last month. Things like that should teach people about waterfowl hunting and how they can participate. And given the number of waterfowl that we currently have across North America, now is probably the best time you could ever start waterfowl hunting because we have tons of ducks, geese, and swans that move through Utah each year. Last update, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the federal duck stamp. It's set to increase for the 2015-16 hunting season. This is a program that was started quite a few years ago, and 98 cents of each dollar that's raised goes directly back to either habitat acquisition or conservation easements, the waterfowl. To date, that program's raised about $800 million and conserved roughly 6 million acres of waterfowl habitat. The problem that has been experienced with the stamp lately is that its buying power has dramatically decreased since the time we started that stamp. In 1991, it was estimated we could purchase or restore about an acre of waterfowl habitat for about $306. That's increased today to about $1,100 per acre. And so for that reason, Congress authorized the increase of the waterfowl stamp this last October. And that will go into effect for July 1, and the price will go up from $15 to $25, but everything else will remain intact as far as what those funds go towards. They'll still be directed primarily towards waterfowl habitat. So getting into waterfowl populations across North America, I just mentioned this a minute ago, but duck populations have been looking great the last several years. Last year was the highest number of ducks we have on record. We had close to 50 million breeding waterfowl across North America. So there's lots of ducks to be had out of there. Our Canada goose population looks similar. It's been on an increasing trend since about the mid-60s. We have a really abundance of Canada geese across the state and across the flyway. So Canada geese are doing great. Tundra swans, it's the same story, continue to increase really since about the 60s, and we have close to 50 or 60,000 swans that have moved through Utah each fall. So the way that our packages work, everything that we do for our waterfowl season is based on the number of mallards in the western part of the flyway. Given that we have a lot of mallards still in our part of the continent, I would anticipate having another liberal season this year, which will be a 107-day season and a bag of seven. We also have three species that have species-specific harvest strategies, so they're not tied into that liberal package. And those are pintail camas, back, and scop. Those exact season dates and bag limits will come out in July. We would anticipate them being similar to what they were last year, given the population estimates from last year for those three species. Our waterfowl season dates, general season will begin on October 3rd and run until January 16th. If we do have a shortened scop season, that'll run from October 3rd until December 27th. All other bag limits, possession limits for ducks, coots, snipes, docking deer will all be the same from what they were last year. For dark goose seasons, we're not recommending any changes for these as well. They'll be the same as last year, the same three zones, as well as similar season dates to what we had last year. For our light goose seasons, those will be the same zones. We are recommending a change in the dates. We're trying to provide as much hunter opportunity as possible and have our seasons win the most number of light geese are in our state. And so we are recommending moving the light season for light goose season around a little bit to extend that hunt into February when we start to see more birds start to move north to go towards their breeding grounds. Bag and possession of it for light geese will be the same as they have been previous years. Our swan season will run from October 3rd until December 13th. It'll be for the Great Salt Lake hunt area only, as it has in the past, the same number of permits. Our youth day will be September 19th. And we aren't recommending any changes to our shooting times. They'll be the same as they were last year. So for each day of the waterfowl season, we'll begin a half hour before official sunrise and go till official sunset. The only other changes we're making for migratory birds, and this is one that we include in our upland game guidebook, but we are required to make a change to them this year because we revised our harvest strategy. We have had a 30-day season for bent-tailed pigeons in Utah, but we are reducing that to a 14-day season. That's just for concerns of band-tailed pigeon populations. We're working on increasing our population monitoring strategies. We currently don't have a great feel for where the population's at. And so given those concerns, we reduce the season just to be on the safe side. So finally, just a few changes that are being made to the rule. One is updating the name of common snipe to Wilson snipe. We also went through and clarified the rest areas and the non-shooting areas across the state. Most notably was the Alabama Causeway. We just redefined some of those boundaries and make sure they're clear and enforceable. And lastly, we did a small update on the Barrington Bay Waterfowl Management Area just for where you can have blinds on that waterfowl management area. Those are all our recommendations. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the rack?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. What about our cranes? I noticed that been mentioned. Is that because there's no changes to our seasons? Or?
Yeah, so those are on the three-year rotation that the Upland Game Guidebook's following. So we did those last year, and so no changes will be made for the next 2 years. But permits numbers for those do fluctuate on an annual basis, depending on what that population is doing.
Did we get two seasons last year?
We had three seasons out here in the basin and then a couple more across the state. So we'll be going with that same season structure, so they'll be hunted for about a month straight with three different hunts occurring during that time. And permit numbers should be going up a little bit from where they were last year. So.
There's a lot of them.
There are.
I think they eat more corn than the elk do.
Yeah, at times they can definitely be broad.
About half the size of a bull, too, something. They're well fed. Anyway, that was my question.
Any other questions, Murak?
One more question down here.
Dan.
So, Blair, yeah, the trends that you were showing at one slide where the waterfowl numbers are going way up and hunters are going way down, that was specifically for Utah, right?
It was, yeah.
What are you seeing, like, our neighboring states or the country as a whole, Western U.S., same trends or?
Yeah, it's a similar trend. It seems like the trend in the number of hunters overall has been declining for the last decade or two. And it's for a variety of reasons. I mean, just you know, social media and things like that, kids participating less. So it's a variety of reasons out there for why it's happening.
You guys coordinate much with other states to try and figure out how to maybe change that trend?
Yeah, there are a variety of programs that are occurring out there. We don't deal with it so much, I guess, in my area, but we have a lot of outreach to people across the state, across the country that communicate, and we're going to try to fix that trend.
Turn that around, yeah?
Yes.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
I've got
one question.
Go ahead. Question.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Up in the Manila area, the last several years, I've seen a big increase of, I think they're Asian doves or these great big huge dove pigeon looking things. Are they a protected wildlife or are they?
They're not. No, their name is the Eurasian collared dove, and they've been showing up all across the state for about the last 15 years or so. They are a protected wildlife species, so you can harvest them whenever you want, however you want. A lot of guys will eat them. They taste pretty much like any other dove or
like buzzard.
No, they eat a lot of grain, so I mean they can't be prepared right. They taste really good.
So they're not protected?
They're not. No.
You can't hunt them during the dove season, or you can obviously.
You can. Yeah, you can hunt them 365 days a year. Really, no weapon restrictions, shooting hours, anything like that. So.
Well,
they're introduced. Kind of a follow up question to that question there. Are there certain states where they're seeing more, higher numbers of these Eurasian collared doves? How does Utah compare to other states, or do you know?
It's similar to probably what other states have seen. They were introduced in Florida in the 80s and spread pretty much across the country in just a short period of time. They tend to pop up just about everywhere.
They're throughout the whole lower 48.
Yeah, just about every state, I imagine, has them.
What about the avian flu? Are we seeing anything in our area?
Yeah, we have been doing detection on that. This last year, probably the last two or three weeks of the waterfowl season, we sampled quite a few birds around the Great Salt Lake. We did find one or two that were positive for it, but it's not the strain that everyone's concerned about. It's one that's been in wild bird populations for quite some time now. There are plans to continue monitoring birds this fall, so we'll probably be swallowing 1,000 birds, I would imagine, in the state, as well as across the country. There'll be an effort to try to monitor that and see if it's increasing or not.
See if it's increasing or not, Western flyway.
We haven't really seen any problems here in Utah, but I know in the Midwest, some of the poultry industry back there has been impacted by it, so it could potentially have future applications here.
Yeah.
It did increase.
Okay. Other questions where they're at? Questions by our public.
One public?
Good. Discussion by the board, comments by the board, motion.
I'll second it.
Okay. Brett made the motion to accept it as presented, and Mitch seconded it. All in favor?
All
right, unanimous. Thank you. Move to the Urban Deer Control, Scott McFarland.
I'll try.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott McFarland, Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for our division. And this evening, I will be presenting changes to our current urban deer control law, R657-65. As I said before, currently we have an urban deer control rule. This was established as a pilot program in 2013. It was a two-year pilot program with two specific cities, Highland and Bountiful Cities. And the purpose of this was to evaluate a two-year pilot program that enabled each to design and administer and control a plan for the lethal and non-lethal removal of resident deer damaging private property or threatening public safety. This current rule will sunset August 31st. That's when the 2 years are up, August 31st of 2015. And so proposing changes to that. One of them would be to extend that. Why we have a pilot program? probably the main reason is because we have a lot of deer that have taken up residence and within city limits, and we wanted to test the logistical and the economic feasibility of controlling these urban deer populations on a large scale basis. We wanted to determine the effectiveness and the cost of various deer control techniques in these urban settings also. What I'll do is kind of go through how this worked. Highland City chose a plan that used certified volunteer archers to lethally remove the deer from the selected properties within the city limits. It was a plan that was totally designed and directed by the city. In 2013, they removed 72 deer using these certified volunteer archers. They logged in 322 volunteer hours doing that, and they actually donated about 5,500 pounds of meat that first year. In 2014, 42 deer were removed, and logging in about 184 volunteer hours. And what this came out to is it averaged about 4.5 hours per deer removed. So the labor cost of that. So on the other hand, Bountiful City chose a non-lethal trap and remove program in cooperation with the division. Bountiful City was responsible for providing 2 employees for the project. They did a lot of the baiting of the traps and moving the traps around and things. The city was also responsible for signing up residents and identifying the trap locations. We didn't want to go in as a division and say, we're going to trap here and here. We wanted the city to designate that. And they also were responsible for enforcing the feeding ordinance. The division was responsible for choosing the appropriate trap method for the locations, organizing volunteer efforts. We had a huge volunteer effort that worked on this, and checking traps and processing deer and transporting deer to the approved sites. The objectives of doing this non-lethal program, was we wanted to determine the effectiveness and cost of translocation of deer from the city. We wanted to look at public perception pre and post removal and assess changes in deer vehicle collisions, kind of as a measuring factor. In 2014, we just barely got started, and we're only work on that several weeks, but there's 36 deer were relocated. The winter of 2014 and 15, we were a lot more prepared. We had traps, we were ready to hit this full force, and we relocated 211 deer. It was a very difficult trap year because we have very open winter. Deer have to be hungry to come into traps. And so even with that, we still did fairly well with moving 211 deer. We had about 10 to 15 volunteers per day, plus 2 deer DWR personnel. It's not that it required 10 to 15 volunteers. It's just a lot of people like to help on this. So it took about three hours a day to process the deer to go check all the traps and things within this, throughout the city, and process those. And we averaged about 6 deer per trap day. And this is as a comparison to the Highland. It took about about 3.8 hours per deer, but that doesn't include the transportation costs or time that was dedicated to that. So the preliminary results of this is both methods were effective in removing deer from within the city limits. They did pretty well that way. Non-lethal methods were definitely more costly, with time and labor intensive. Survival estimates for the long lethal removal have yet to be determined. We're really only in the first year of that. We still have one year left to complete that project and determine survival. And non-lethal removal is not always an option in some of the areas. So with this urban deer control rule, the general purpose of this is to enable a city to design and administer a control plan for the lethal or non-lethal removal of year-round resident deer damaging private property or threatening public safety within the city. So the changes that we're proposing to the current rule is we want to make this, we want to take away the sunset date for one thing. We want to make it available to cities with a statewide with a population of 1,000. It's 1,000 people, not 1,000 deer. So we don't count the deer in this case. We want to make the emphasis in the rule is targeting resident year-round deer, require annual reports of legal removal activities. And the cities also must petition the division to include any capture or relocation plans or non-legal removal. And the division has the sole discretion to authorize or prohibit such activities as part of the plan. We've got some safeguards, and some of this is a little bit redundant from what I just went through, but what the division's role in this will be is we will specify the seasonal time period when the deer may be removed. The total number of deer that may be removed annually, we will set a cap on that. And the number of deer by gender that may be removed. We're requiring, as I said before, we're going to require an annual report of all non-lethal or all lethal removal activities from the cities that choose to go that way. The capture and live removal has to be agreed on between the city and the DWR. So it's just not a given that they can use that option. The division or the city can terminate the plan within 7 days with advance written notice. And the city has to renew the authorizations every 3 years and must go through the public review process. This is a pretty important part of this rule is the public review process. We don't want cities doing these removal plans contrary to the public opinion on that. So the process that the city would go through to do this is they obtain a COR or a certificate of registration, and basically that's just a document that the division would issue to the cities that allows them to design and implement a deer removal plan for their city. So the city would design the plan with the public input, following the sideboards that the certificate of registration and the rule have for them. The city would present the plan for public comment, and the city would then implement the plan. They provide annual reports to the division, and they renew it every 3 years if they choose to, using the public review process. So that's it for the changes to the urban deer here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions from RAC? Well, I have a terrible. Could a city petition the DWR to qualify when there's less than 1,000 people? I'm talking about Manila. Manila's got a real problem, but they have less than 1,000 residents, but still sustain a lot of damage.
Yeah, they can still. It's not that you're out of the running for doing that. You can still petition the DWR. We'll probably use some different methods, and there probably will be more division participation in doing that. The reason that we did this with the minimum of 1,000 people is because normally when one of the requirements in the rule is that they have to have at least a million dollar liability bond insurance. And most cities that have less than 1,000 in the population don't have the ability to do that. So that's one of the reasons that we did that. Because the city is assuming all the liability of this.
Yeah.
But they can still petition the division for removal or deer in smaller cities like
that. A lot of the deer that are coming into Manila are coming out of the hills in Wyoming too, so that might be a issue with them if we killed their deer or took their deer and put them somewhere else in Utah.
Yeah, and like I said, the division's participation in this is going to be setting kind of the sideboards on the number of deer and the time of time they can be taken. What we want to do is make sure that we're targeting the resident deer that are living in town their whole life. And so the times when they'll be able to take these deer are going to be regulated so that we don't target the migratory deer that would be coming and going through there.
Yeah, they're not migratory deer. they're just coming out of the foothills in Wyoming down into the fields in the town of Manila, but all night long and going back up into the foothills. So,
and if they're in the fields like that, some of that should be probably, it should be, could be dealt with through a depredation.
Uh-huh. And they've got one proposed this year for that.
Okay.
Antlerless. The other question I had with your lethal hunting, I mean, you shoot a deer with a bow and arrow, and we all know that they're going to run 200 yards before they lay down and die. So do they go in somebody's neighbor's, another neighbor's yard and lay down? And have you had issues with that?
Well, the only city that did, we had the two cities, Highland City chose the archery method.
Uh-huh.
And what they did is they certified, it was a very rigorous certification they had to go through. They had to be able to hit targets like 100% of the time at certain distances. And they also had restrictions put on. They had to have all their arrows that were marked with their name on them. And in all of the 72 or 4 and the 46 deer that were taken during that time, they didn't have any complaints of the deer running off that way. It's not that it couldn't happen. It's just that they did this. In fact, they did it so covertly that the residents didn't even know that there was a rodeo tape going on. And there were some complaints about it, but it was after the fact. When they heard that it had been going on. So, another option, because crossbows are a legal weapon now to take deer, you know, that they would have the option to use that, which probably would alleviate some of that wounding loss, although often dying in places where they should, where they don't want it to.
Are you making use of the deer that are trapped, or are they just kind of a burden that you try to find somewhere to put them? Or are they helping the deer populations elsewhere, the ones you haul off?
Well, the ones that we did in Bountiful, the answer to your question is yes, we are making use of them. In fact, this region was the recipient of about 100 of those deer. What we did is we looked at statewide. We went through the process last fall of identifying locations through the deer management plan, the statewide deer management plan. We had locations we were approved. And we looked at certain criteria where we wanted to put these deer. One of them was if they had to have a very low population or no population of deer that historically has had a good population of deer. It can be a better burden on agricultural fields. We didn't want to dump them out and have them show up in people's fields. And we went through several criteria, but one of those was Big Wash.
Big Wash.
South of Mike. we took a little over 100 deer and put them out there. And all the adult deer, not all the deer, the fawns didn't receive radio collars, but all the adult deer had radio collars, so we're monitoring survival.
Did they in general just take off, or did they kind of stay away from them?
You know, normally what they do is they kind of stick around for a little bit, but within, we had one bunch, I think, that went 15 miles from the release site within the first month, but most of them stayed in the general area for at least for the first about 2 months. Stay in the general area when they're released.
Thanks. Other questions for Iraq?
What other sites in the state were release sites?
We had, for this project, we had two release sites. One was Big Wash, the other one was in northern Box Elder County, out by the Raft River Mountains. They had some pretty low populations out there.
And I think they were all disappointed to go out there instead of coming out to the northeast region.
Northeast region.
This was home out here. They were really upset. They were ready to jump in the truck and come all the way back.
It's almost animal abuse to take them from Bountiful.
Yeah. Andrew, I don't know how many you took to Manila.
Zero. Couple loads.
One of the reasons that Big Wash was selected is because they had a population of somewhere between 1 and 50 deer, And we've done some, we've done quite a few habitat projects out there, and historically that has had a good deer population. So
big one was actually pretty good. We've got a lot of good growth on bitter brush and stuff in there. They wasn't on the lower end.
I was just joking. The chainings, that's good stuff up there, right?
Compared to Valfloria.
Compared to Aunt Martha's petunias.
Well, you have to realize that these deer come from that environment right there. They've got cars and dogs and kids with slingshots and gardens and weird fences with spikes on top of them to deal with. Yeah. You know, so it's not the best environment, but they've adapted to it. So they should be able to handle big shaped.
Any other questions by the rack? Questions for the public?
I got a couple of thoughts on that. I live probably in the area of the basin in the River Valley where there's the highest car deer collision rate of anywhere that I think of. It's from Vernal East out towards Jensen and out to your first group and so forth. Seen a nice buck just killed on the road out here a little while ago. The other thing that makes me wonder, that's a terrible waste, especially when the deer here in the valley seem to have a good genetics in their antlers. And we're talking here at some of these meetings about actually having conservation hunts in the book cliffs to take the lifetime 2 points to 3 points out of the herd. Is there any thought been given to capture some of the resident deer that are not in Vernal or Naples, but are in this valley, in right in the region where we're having lots of mortality from automobiles, then to subsidize or to supplement the genetics in that region? From what you know, here not too long back, we discussed right here, conservation hunts in the book cliffs to try to change the difference in the genetics of the animal growth. You've got poor genetics in the animal, you always have that. A lot of people like to blame it on the three-quarter better house we used to have, but I've lived there a lifetime. We've always had the same poor genetics in those deer out there. Deer that they're capturing, can we get some of them that have got better genetics introduced out in our region?
That would go through DAX. I'm not sure. You know, that would be a whole discussion that probably DAX would need to take up with Bill, with
Justin.
What's your name?
Scott.
Oh, Scott and Justin. But that is something that can be discussed. It's not off the table.
Another thought on that same line. That is one of the few deer herds left in the state that's still below objective. Adding deer like there wouldn't. There's no farm, no rancher, or no place where deer damage, and that no clip deer herd is still below objective.
We have a highway.
Pardon?
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
One of the things we don't want to do is we're still in the question marks.
Okay, let's go to any comments. I don't have any cards or anything, but comments.
I'd like to hear Scott's comment.
Okay. That's by the rack.
What we've done is, if you want to hear, we're coming up with a deer translocation policy. One thing we don't do is translocate deer for depredation situations. We do it for, and I don't have a policy in front of me. It hasn't been approved yet, but we can do it in urban settings. We can do it. We don't want to use it for population management so much, but we can use it for management for what you said, that to take them from a problem area, you know, like an overpopulation. We use hunting to do that. But it's below objective. That's what you're saying is the discussion would have to be pretty well thought out, because there's a lot of things that have to come with that. You know, we have to look at disease concerns, we have to look at migration concerns, taking them far enough away from populations that they don't want them back. And some of the deer that we took some fawns that at the beginning it was just sort of over the mountain over from Davis County into Morgan County. I'm not sure if they beat us back or not, but you know, distances, there's a lot of distances have to be considered. There's a lot of considerations when we look at some.
And it would have to go through a public input process as well. We'd go come, we'd probably work out a plan, and then the plan has to go around and get public input on it, because I'm sure that there would probably be some opposition from the guys that may want to hunt in that local area where we're going to take them from to move them somewhere else. And I think that that would have to be weighed out and discussed.
A thought that I had.
Yeah. That's a good thought.
It's a good thought.
That's a good thought, Jason.
Yeah. Okay, any other discussion by the RAC?
Or motion?
I make the motion that we accept. Oh, go ahead.
I make the motion that we accept the Urban Deer Control Plan as presented.
I second.
Okay. Andrea and Jerry seconded. Okay, all in favor? Okay, thank you. Turn the time to your regional supervisor.
Thanks. I got to come around so I can look y'all in the eye here. All right. As I've said before, we've got three people that are going to be leaving us. And I really appreciate everything that they've done and put in. With Wayne being one of them that's going to leave, that puts us without a chairman and a vice chairman. And so we need to, before we do that.
Roger's our vice chairman now.
Right? Yeah, but he's, so here, Wayne, this is yours. Take it home. Everybody can see this is Wayne's. He can take it home, and his wife goes to say something bad, and she's doink, and everything's fine, right?
Cool.
Yeah. Why don't you take it down to NRCS
now? So, Mr. Chairman, do you have any preference on how you'd like to do this? Do you want to take motions? Do you want to take votes? Do you want to? What would you like to do? What's the pleasure of the group?
You guys want to do motions? You want to nominate somebody? How do you want to handle the election?
How about just simple railroad?
Simple railroad.
All right, we railroad Mitch.
I was thinking
about that. You're my big mouth.
That'd be good. Good chairman. I've got too many of these
jobs. We've got. Some of you have gone into Salt Lake to the meetings, have been into board meetings, so you've got some experience on with that and how that would work. I know I've seen Randy there several times.
I'd like to make a motion that we make motion.
Make motion?
Nomination.
Okay, for nominations.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Do we have a motion?
I make a motion, we accept my motion.
I accept.
All right, so we got that part out of the way. We have a motion for a chairman.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Randy.
Randy?
Okay. To be chairman.
Randy Durr?
Second that.
Jerry's the second. Those in favor? Unanimous.
Well, you can vote.
You can vote.
What can you get a vote? I'm right.
Well, it's too bad we have voted already. So, Randy's going to be the new chairman. Do we have a nomination for a move for a second for a vice chair?
I'd like to nominate Dan.
Dan?
Vice chair.
Do we have a second? Okay, you got 2 seconds. All in favor?
Wait, who was seconded?
Just choose out of these two. David Robert or Rod. Okay, and it was unanimous. So, Northeastern RAC, we now have Dana Bates as the vice chair. We have Randy Durth as the chair. Now, Dan will cover for Randy when Randy can't make it. He's made it even when he hasn't had to be there, so
yeah.
That's been pretty good. I've said it before, we have an outstanding rack. You guys take your job seriously, and you work hard at it, and I really, really appreciate it. Andrea filled her first term, and I won't let her go. She's going to stay for another 4 years. So she's stuck. I think everybody else is on. We have some that will come up in 17, and I will talk to you in a couple of years about that. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Appreciate all you do.
Wayne, could I'd like to personally thank Wayne. What he's
yes. He's worked hard at it, and he's been very busy at what he's done, too. So we appreciate it. He's been good for our region, for the state.
It's good because you're involved here. You're involved at the board meeting out in Salt Lake, and it's good exposure, and you get a better understanding of what's going on. All the things that BWR does that helps our wildlife populations. The good things going on.
And Wayne's represented us very well out there in the board meetings.
Yeah, yep.
Have to sit up there and give reports of everything we do here. He's done a very good job.
And so I think we're well set. We've got three new people that'll be coming in, and they'll fit in very well with our group here. At least I think I've got it. It hasn't been officially accepted in Salt Lake yet, but
sure. You're not going to share their name with them.
We sat down. Wayne and I sat down with them and talked with them, interviewed them, and decided how to work it out. We'll find out here in a month.
In a month, next meeting, you'll be able to know.
And then we'll have a rack training coming up probably
in June.
In June. Yeah. So we'll go and we'll meet somewhere for a day, and you'll see them then. I hope.
And they're good, dynamic people. They'll be good people to be able to hear. Yeah. So those names have been turned into the state.
Yep.
State level.
Yeah,
state,
I talked
your state office.
Yeah, I talked to the director about it a week ago.
And Randy knows he can't vote, right? One sportsman down.
Well, actually, I've kind of read up on the rules a little bit, and the Robert's Rules of Orders, the chairman can vote.
Tiebreaker.
And the chairman actually can make motions, although it's not very often that it's done.
The chairman can't make up new rules.
Tiebreaker, isn't it?
I read it. I looked pretty good on it yesterday, but
we'll look it up and we'll be sure.
I kind of looked that up myself because
I know that
we're a good time and buzzed by the rules.
So thank you very much. Appreciate you coming very much.
Okay.
That's the only reason.
I'm actually adjourned.
I actually have.
Okay. Drive careful going home. You're so